Appaloosa Radio offers Dry Wheat Stubble, an original audio story, Chapter 2.
Mrs. Becky Blake, I am Lisa Paternino and I am in love with your stud husband. He loves me too. So, we're going to get married. He is going to divorce you, so he can be all mine. He has such a great body. So warm. So sexy. I just love it when he touches me.
In the thousands of times that Becky Blake had mentally replayed the call from Lisa Paternino, she said she always heard the conversation and with a distinctive witch's cackle. A witch's cackle? No. Of course, that wasn't true. Lisa was not a witch. She had no magical powers. She didn't have a cauldron in which she mixed special potions. It was Becky's mind playing tricks on her. Becky would never call another woman a witch. That would not be a Christian thing to say. But, deep in Becky's innermost thoughts, she could imagine a witch's cackle, reinforcing her perception that weird, black magic had transformed her husband into something he was not. Becky Blake was the kind of woman who married for life. Her strong religious faith only solidified her determination. She was married for life with three wonderful sons, and the most perfect husband. She was working full-time only to help ends meet. Her druthers had always been to be a stay-at-home mom, who was constantly available to meet the needs of her men. That's how she saw herself. One who was there primarily to meet the needs of her sons and her husband. How to explain Jeff's behavior? The only answer, she believed, was that a demonic force had come into her life. Probably Satan himself. The only reason she could conceive of was that her faith was being tested. Just like poor old Job in the Bible. Her faith was being tested by the devil himself, and he was using this woman, Lisa whatever, to do it. As she figured things out, she found that the witch's cackle had grown louder, grown closer, grown clearer. Lisa Murray had grown up in Daly City, just south of San Francisco. She was an astonishingly beautiful woman. Tall with honey blonde hair, violet eyes, and a perfectly trim body. She had begun her modeling career when she was just 14. By 17, she was a high-priced call girl, prostitute whose regular customers were some of the richest men on the Pacific Coast. What had made her move from modeling to prostitution? In a word, drugs. The men she dated would give her drugs, sharing their personal stash with her. Soon, she really, really liked the feelings that the drugs induced. It was an easy trade, some sex for what she genuinely wanted. Rich men wanted to be seen with a beautiful woman. They took drugs. Gave her some. And then gave her lots of money so she could buy more. When she was 23, one of her regulars flew her in his private jet to Denver and set her up in a luxury condo. She always called him the cowboy, for obvious reasons. His family was in the oil business, and to Lisa, he seemed fantastically wealthy. The cowboy would often express his tremendous love. He even promised to divorce his wife and to marry her. It took her a while, but Lisa eventually figured things out. She was not only beautiful, she was also incredibly smart. She learned that the cowboy did not have any money of his own. He had married into a rich old oil family. His money was really coming from his wife. So, there would never be divorce. He would never give up that much money. Lisa's interest switched from the not-so-really rich cowboy, to a man whose wealth was unquestionably large. It was the cowboy's primary drug supplier, Denver's drug kingpin, George Paternino. He had built Denver's spaceship house that seemed to hover above a steep mountain ravine. It was an architectural marvel, one of a kind. It was also twice the size of the Cowboys. It featured an indoor swimming pool that ended in a romantic grotto. He had added an indoor driving range. The house had its own lighted tennis courts, and a private mountain hiking trail. George Paternino drove European sports cars, ate at the best restaurants, and traveled by charter jet. He wasn't much to look at, long, hippie, unwashed hair. But he had easy access to every drug imaginable, and his parties were phenomenal with many sports and music superstars. Lisa met him at one of his parties. He asked her out, and on that very first date asked her to marry him. She did, in Las Vegas, 2 weeks later. Unlimited drugs. Massive amounts of money. How could life get any better? The answer is that it became a lot worse, very quickly. The Denver Police Department and the Drug Enforcement Agency closed a trap on George Paternino that only took them 6 weeks to plan and put into operation. George never saw it coming. He opted for a plea deal, 8 years in state prison, and a large fine. Technically, George Paternino was not yet eligible for conjugal visitations, but the chief of the Denver Police Department urged that he be placed in the program. He hoped that during the conjugal visitations, George would reveal additional information that would lead to the arrest of others. An officer from the Denver PD was always watching and listening whenever Lisa made her conjugal visits to George. Of course, as the senior watch sergeant, Jeff Blake also always observed the conjugal visits. Only his interest was not in obtaining actionable intelligence about drug activities. His interest was in Lisa. He had developed an obsession for her. He dreamed about her at night. Visualized images of her when he was supposed to be in prayer during the Thursday night prayer groups. Created poetry about and for her, yes, poetry. Sang songs to her in the shower. Fantasized stories in which he was the hero, and she was the fair lady that he had to save. It is surprising that Becky never noticed Jeff's behavior. She noticed everything about everybody, always trying to anticipate needs, always trying to be helpful. But, she never noticed Jeff's obsession. It was not that Jeff was hiding his obsession for his prisoner's wife. He was, after all, singing songs to her in the shower. I asked Becky once whether she had any inkling about Jeff's obsession. She said, no. Nothing. The only explanation she could form was that the devil covered her eyes, blocking her vision. One of George's lawyers had told Lisa that the police sometimes use conjugal visits to gain information from prisoners, information that would otherwise not be available to them. She knew that she would be spied upon. She made every effort to be cautious. Sharing information with the police, even if it were accidental, could be extremely dangerous. In the supposedly private rooms at the conjugal visitation center, Lisa was certain, behind the two-way mirrors, the police were spying on them. So, she made the conjugal visits about the joys of sex, playing the moaning and groaning female partner who was being satisfied by the performance of her partner. Of course, it was an act. Still, it had to be believable enough that the cops and the guards bought it. Denver PD sent a detective down to the prison for the first 5 conjugal visits, but then decided it was not worth the time and the effort. So it was that on Lisa's 6th conjugal visit, Jeff Blake sat alone watching George Paternino make love to Lisa. In the darkened room, watching with intense emotion, he decided to act. As Lisa Paternino started to leave the conjugal visitation center, Sergeant Jeff Blake handed her a note. It simply said, "Call me and we can get together." He had given her his home phone number. He had given her his home phone number.